Okay. I'm going to talk about what I call parallel transport in lower dimensions. Parts of the ideas behind this were mentioned already by Danny. So instead of saying any introductory words, or before saying any introductory words, I will recall what Danny just taught us about connections, and then I will indicate where I want to go from there. So, as we've just learned from Danny's talk, a connection on a principal bundle and their categorifications, so connections on principal bundles can you read this? I'll try to write better. Are best thought of as Lie algebraic morphisms. That was the main thing I think that Danny observed. Okay, then I will say it in a second. Okay. So I'll write this way. Our best thought of as Lie algebraic. Right, he didn't say it that way. Okay, so I recall how that works. Namely, building, of course, on old insights concerning connections in terms of splitting of certain sequences, we have that given a bundle on a space X, we want to form the tangent space of X as well as the tangent space of the total space P of my bundle P over X and divide out the action of the structure group on that. I think this did appear in Danny's talk this way. If not, that's the middle term of the sequence he was talking about. It's just the Atiyah algebraic sequence associated to a principal bundle. So we have this projection here. And we're supposed to think of vectors in here as infinitesimal paths on base space that just have a location and a certain direction which they're about to head. So this is supposed to be thought of as...
I'm going to be very proactive in making and interrupting you. So,
very good.
So can you draw maybe some pictures of like X and infinitesimal
oh, yeah.
in it and things like that, maybe on another board or something so that everything you here with all these fancy symbols.
Yeah, I'm about to draw a picture shortly, in fact.
Well,
so, okay, I'll draw it now. All right. Right. Right, okay. Okay. So I'll skip something, and let's recall. I'll get back to it, but I'll first draw the picture now. So principal bundle in pictures. This. It's base space. I call it X, maybe. And it's a total space over base space. I call that X before. P. Such that over each point in the base space, X, we have a certain fiber, which we call PX, which for a principal bundle we require to look like some Lie group G. Except that we sort of, as John puts it, forget the identity of G. So we have a G torsa, a G space, which is equivalent to G over each point of X. That's a principal bundle. If it has a connection, there's a special property. I mean, we may do a certain operation on this bundle. Say we have two fibers. One over x prime, and say we have a path connecting in the base space x with x prime. So my paths here look one-dimensional, but they may in general be paths in higher dimensional axes. Then we may pick over x any point in the fiber above it. Say, how do I call this? P maybe, the point P in the fiber over x, and then specifying a connection allows us to lift the path in base space to a path in the total space such that we call it parallel. So it projects down to the original path and transverses the base space somewhat like this. And this entire procedure is set up in such a way that if we had chosen a different lift of the start point, in particular a lift that is related to the original point by the action of a group element of our structure group, then we sort of lift the entire path in an equivariant way. So in particular, if we ended up at the point P prime here, we will now end up at the point GP prime. Meaning that it doesn't matter if we first start at P, parallel transport, to end in P prime, and then act with our gauge group, with our structure group, or if we first act with the structure group and then parallel transport. Yes, please. Yeah, it's supposed to be. As I've just said, so that's another property maybe which will help see this. So I've just said that the connection ensures that the endpoint we ended with our lifted path will be G acted on, acting on the original endpoint if you started at the starting point by acting with G first, right? Right. So the second property. So this is one important property of such a connection. The other property, of course, is this is functorial in the sense that if my path splits up into two paths, which I may compose, then the same argument holds. So this would be x double prime then maybe. The same argument holds for all these points in between. So in particular, if this then is, I guess it's P double prime, then this point would be GP double prime. Okay? So a principal bundle with connection defines the effective functor. Namely, we get for each a functor from paths to fibers in the following sense. For each point in the base space, the functor assigns us the fiber of the principal bundle over that point. Same for the endpoint. And as you can see, by associating endpoints to start points, we get a map from the fiber PX to the fiber PY, such that it is G equivariant, meaning that it doesn't matter whether I first act with G, then parallel transport, or the other way around. So in other words, that path down here, let me call it gamma, is lifted to a G torsomorphism of the fibers above it. And this is called the parallel transport along gamma of my connection nabla on the principal bundle P.
Can I ask a question?
Please.
Not you, but is this exactly what you were doing last night?
No, but
yeah.
Well, this is just the ordinary concept of a connection.
Yeah, right. The one difference is that here we have lots of arrows and no arrows, two arrows.
Right, that's the.
Within each of the
right, so the ordinary definition of a connection looks a little different. I haven't really specified the full definition here, but it's given in terms similar to what Danny had in his talk with horizontal and vertical subspaces of the tangent space of P, but it amounts to precisely this, and the main observation here is that we can equivalently reformulate the ordinary notion of a connection on a bundle, on a principal bundle, as a smooth, well, as a functor from path and base space to torsomorphisms. So let me call the category of paths in base space P1X. For the moment, just imagine one some sensible notion of path. I might make this precise later. What exactly?
Unparametrized path.
Okay, so that's it. So in order for the, so this connection has the property it doesn't depend on the parametrization of the path. So we want to take maps, say, from, sorry, write it down. We want to take maps from the unit interval, say. Okay, right. All right. Very good, yeah. So this is supposed to be the group, or its objects are just the points of X. And Morphisms are parameterization classes of paths, smooth paths in X. And we require that if two paths are the same except for the orientation, if one is just running back along the other, then they are mutually inverse. More technically, it means we divide out thin homotopies between paths. Not all homotopies. We don't consider the principal group out of X, but thin homotopies. Right? Okay.
So homomorphism of G-closures is just a homomorphism of groups if fibers had units, is that right?
Yes. If we if we regard G as a G-torsor over itself, which is, I guess, what you mean, then a G-torsor morphism from G to itself is just, say, if we regard left G-torsors, then it would be just right multiplication with the group element. So we'll come to that in a moment when we locally trivialize this thing by identifying the fibers locally with the principle, with the typical fiber, the group, right? Okay, so my domain category is paths, suitably smooth paths in X. And that target category here is something I call, or we call, the transport group out of P, which is precisely what you think it is. Its objects are the fibers of the principal bundle, and its morphisms are all fiber morphisms between them. And we can think of G-torsor morphisms between them. If you want to exhibit the smooth structure on that group out, we write it as P fiber multiplied over G in a sense of itself. So the point is, take any point in a fiber here over some point X. Specifying a torsor morphism to another fiber amounts to just picking any other point in that other fiber that already uniquely specifies my torsor morphism, and then just divide out this GX, which just says if I had chosen any other point in the original fiber, I would have reached the corresponding point obtained by the GX in the target fiber.
So P cross G, P is morphisms in your group, or objects?
Objects in this groupboard are fibers over points of X.
Trans of P is a set of morphisms, right?
No, it's supposed to be the full thing. So trans of P is the category which contains morphisms of this sort that go between fibers.
I was just wondering when you said P cross over G, P, that's space.
Right, that's the space of morphisms, yeah. Sorry, okay. So there's two projections to X, which is the space of objects, right? I divide out, so G X on P, and I divide out the diagonal action of G on these two copies of P. Right, so let me draw a picture for this. Say our gauge group G is U1, then a U1 torsor is just a circle. Another, say this is the circle over X. There's another circle over Y. What are the torsor morphisms between these two circles? Well, I have to tell you where any one of these points on the first circle is sent to. Say this point, P, sent to, say, this point, P prime here. That already entirely specifies the torsor morphism, because if you want to know where this point goes to, P twiddle, you'll just compute the group element that relates them. Say this is GP, okay? Then it, of course, gets sent to GP prime. Yes, it's a G-torsor morphism, right? Oh, okay, it's a morphism of G-spaces. Right, so these fibers are G-spaces. They're acted on by G, right? With a particular property that they sort of have the same size as G. They are equivalent to G. Isomorphic even as G spaces.
Well, you said what a torsor was, but it's just by. So a torsor is a G torsor, the space on which G acts, which is isomorphic to G itself. So the torsor acts on itself by the multiplication. So a U1 torsor is a fancy name for a circle. And there he drew a couple of them. And then a U1 torsor morphism is a fancy name for a rotation. Sending one circle to another. And so he pointed out that you can specify it by specifying a point on the first circle and a point on the second circle, but there's some redundancy in that specification. which is why he did mod it up by a sheet in the description.
Okay, thanks. So the upshot is, given the principal bundle and the connection in it, we get a functor from paths in the base space to total morphisms in the total space, and this functor is called the parallel transport functor. I call it TRA, parallel transport functor. Okay.
So it's a functor between two group words.
Yes, in this case, it's a functor between it's a functor between two group words. Yeah.
Okay.
And it's smooth. Yeah, I will talk about what this is supposed to mean actually. It's sort of obvious, but yeah. So the point of what I'm going to do is I want to reformulate all these things, connections on bundles, in sort of a completely arrow-theoretic way, where I can then have the freedom of internalizing them into whatever context I'd like. So in principle, I could also consider situations where the paths, for instance, don't form a group void, but just a category. You know, if one, for instance, considers these charted two-vector bundles that Bastuners and Rockners would consider, we would not want to require everything to be invertible. But this is the ordinary case in there, everything is invertible, right? Because the parallel transport the other way around is just the inverse of the one in the first direction. All right, so that's the sort of the integrated picture of what a connection is in terms of parallel transport. I drawn this picture on request because I wanted to explain my motivation here. I just really wanted to make the connection to what Danny just said 20 minutes ago, maybe, or an hour ago, or no, at noon, I guess. So if you sort of think of this situation, since it's smooth, you can try to understand it locally at points by just moving just a little bit away from each point. So you just differentiate everything. And then you might maybe want to consider very short paths. So I'm doing this very heuristically now. Consider just a sort of a tangent vector at x and see what it does to first order to the fibers. Right, so it does something to the fibers here. And you see these very short paths down here, they're certainly somehow encoded in the tangent space of x. So a vector on here is something like a very short path. And you see the tangent space to the total bundle, sort of a very short path up here in the total space. And dividing out this g action just ensures that everything behaves the way we've just discussed at the infinitesimal level. Yeah, that's what it is, right. So if Danny had, so Danny had this full sequence here, if you recall, it had tangent space of x on the right, had the space of invariant vector fields in the middle, and it had the vertical vector fields at p here on the left, right? Yeah, I guess it's the same, right? You divide out the g action.
You're being a little ambiguous about whether you need the tangent bundle or the vector fields, which are the sections of the tangent bundle.
Oh, that's right. Yes, sorry.
Right.
So we should write down this thing. Yeah.
Work a little better, so.
That's great. Yeah.
Vector fields on x over the right.
Right. So we would apply sections to all of these vector bundles here. And then, yes, the elements of these spaces of sections would be the corresponding vector fields, right? Thing. Okay, so you see that morphism of, another thing which is sort of important, I mentioned that here in this slogan, which maybe was only implicit in what Danny had. We actually have an algebraic structure on these vector spaces here. They all have what's called an anchor map, whatever that is, to Tx. And all this structure is really just the differential version of the groupoid structure that we had over here. Right here we had a morphism of groupoids, which is nothing but a functor between the corresponding categories. And differentiating this gives us source and target algebraoids and algebraic morphisms between them.
How important is it that we understand that picture that you just drew on the left side in order to understand what you're about to say?
See, this is really supposed to be the same picture as this one, and this picture is certainly important. This is just supposed to be the infinitesimal version of that.
So the only reason I think my urge is from cleaning up this stuff is to point out that this is just what Danny was talking about.
I thought that would help, but maybe it doesn't.
But it's over 3 hours ago. So But I guess what you're really going to do versus work with the group-wide version more than the algebra.
I'm not interested in this yet at the moment.
And the group-wide version is, in fact,
okay,
more intuitive, just the way that groups are more intuitive than the algebra. So,
right.
Because you can actually follow. So.
Exactly, yeah. Well, if... Yeah. Except for one little thing. That's right, I will only talk about these groupoids, but since I've drawn this now, let me finish it and draw one final element into it. The crucial point that Danny made was that a connection is not actually a splitting of Lie algebroids at that level in general. So we want to take these paths to pass up in the total space. But in general, this will fail to be a morphism of these algebroids as measured by the curvature of that connection. So an important thing is that in the end, we want to talk about something like... Right, so the Lie algebra structure here can be regarded as coming from an algebraic structure on these vector spaces, on these vector bundles. Right, so you can formulate, right, so we can formulate the same thing in terms of splittings of Lie algebras, morphisms, right? Sequences of Lie algebras, right? Anyway, okay, maybe I shouldn't have mentioned it. What I want to say is I will talk about sort of splittings of this form, categorification of these, and in the end, I just want you to recall that we might want to do something slightly more fancy and pass to something higher going on up here, which then we call derivations of these spaces of sections. And then we might want to go directly to this point. But don't worry about this for a moment. I just mentioned it because it will be needed at the end, maybe, if I get that far. All right. So that's what a principal bundle is, with connection, how it defines a functor. Now, the crucial question we might ask is, when we got this functor, this transport functor, as a functor from paths in X to the category of all G torsors, right? We've constructed that particular category here with objects are G torsors, but in general we might encounter a functor which just goes to any G torsors and we are not given a smooth structure on the codomain category. So the question is then, which of these functors, which we might want to regard as coming from connection from principal bundles, which of them actually do? So the question is, which of these functors do come from connections on principal bundles? And the answer to that is one of the crucial points I want to talk about. The answer is, I'll put it down here, precisely those such functors which have smooth local trivialization. I will explain what that means. So the answer is those that have smooth local trivialization. So that's the big issue in this entire discussion of parallel transport, particularly in higher dimensional and higher categorified structures. We have some functor that takes paths or higher paths to some other structure, and we might want to require certain properties on how this functor looks like locally, and this we need to understand how to do that. So the idea behind doing it is the following. We cover our base space, which is called X, by open sets, say, or by some other regular epimorphism. So let's assume we cover it by open sets, which are called UI, UJ maybe. And we require that if I have a path which sits entirely just in one of these open sets, say in UI, say it goes from X to Y entirely in UI, then I require that the parallel transport associated to it, which recalls a torsor morphism from PX to PY, called the parallel transport of gamma, I require this to look like a parallel transport that goes just from the group thought of as sitting over X to the group G sitting thought of as sitting over Y. So I imagine I have this assignment of copies the same group to all these points, and I would like to identify the torsor, the fiber over X, with that group. This identification will be some, may I say, torsor isomorphism, some, you know, G space isomorphism here, which you might call T for trivialization, over I, T, I, X.
Yeah, one little word.
Yeah.
Every torsor morphism is an isomorphism.
Right, yeah. Well, yeah, right. So, see, the way I've set up the notation here, thanks, yeah. So, I've written tra of gamma for the image of paths under the parallel transport, but I've written P of X or PX for the image of the points. So, PX is the image of the functor transport, under the functor transport of the point X. Okay? So, it's just my notation. Right, so we do the same thing for that point Y here. So we choose the torsor isomorphism Ti of Y. And doing so allows us, since all these things are isomorphisms here, allows us to regard the transport from X to Y as a torsor morphism that starts at G, goes to PX, goes to PY, and ends at G. Taken together, this will define a morphism here, uniquely, since all these things are invertible, which we might call the trivial transport. I call it triv I in pitch I of the path gamma. That is, I guess, the answer to Aaron's question just a few minutes ago. We may, by locally identifying the fibers of the group, we may identify our torsor morphisms with group elements. So you see this commuting diagram I've drawn here, if you assume such exists over each path in each of these patches, defines for us a natural isomorphism of transport functors. Namely, there is the transport functor that we started with, restricted to the patch UI. It's now isomorphic by a natural isomorphism even, Ti, to that functor which I called triv I, if we regard this functor as also taking values in torsor morphisms, right? Yes, so see, for this to be a natural transformation of functors, Ti. Right. Right. So. Right. So recall we had, if I restrict this thing, we have paths in that patch UI, and we send them to torsor morphisms, G torsor morphisms, and we have a functor here we call it, that was our original transport functor. Restricted to UI, right in the obvious way. And down here we had that functor which I sort of defined by this construction, by that choice of natural isomorphism. I called it triv I, the trivial transport functor over I.
So notice what's special about that one is it sends every object.
Right. Yeah. That will be made precise in a moment. So, and then, see, we had, just by choosing all these identification of fibers, defined a natural isomorphism between these two functors, which in this case would be called Ti. All right?
You look unhappy about when you localize it. You looked especially unhappy when I said that triv I sent every object to G.
That was by construction, so, right?
That's the bottom.
Oh, sorry. See, I just labeled I label all my open sets by an index I and some index set. Oh, I guess there is one, yes. Yes, there is. All right, there's certainly a functor from the category of bundles with connection to the category of transport functors, which are smooth and have smooth local trivializations. But, yeah, that's not what I'm doing right now, no. I'm just, right now I'm trying to understand what it means for the functor to have smooth local trivializations. What I talked about here was the property of that functor is locally looking as a functor that just takes values in a group. Right. It sends objects to the group, but it takes values on paths, right, on paths in the group, since a morphism of G torsors from G regarded as a G torsor to itself is just an element of the group. Am I the one who, yeah, you
know.
That's right, but we want everything to be smooth, right? So we can't just, right. So what you're saying is, we could in principle go ahead and say, okay, fine, as you said, every G torsor is isomorphic by definition, actually, to G. Well, then we just choose these T's globally on all of X and just identify every fiber of G. We can do this, but in general not in a smooth way. And that's precisely the non-triviality of the bundle coming in there. So over a contractible open set, we have a chance of doing this, and we're doing this here. And we will have to deal with how these local choices of trivializations glue on higher, on double intersections, on triple intersections, and so on. And that's precisely, yeah?
For the smoothness that you want to state, it's a local property. No?
Exactly, yes.
So that you may assume that you have it from an open set over which the bundle is triggered.
That's what I'm doing. That's exactly what I'm doing. I'm assuming. The bundle isn't trivial over the open set, it is trivializable, right, to be very precise. And this, the existence of this natural isomorphism T is precisely the trivialization. It identifies the fibers over each point with G, such that you see, you know, this means that down here we have just the trivial bundle X times G. Over each point of X sits a single copy of G. Exactly. I haven't talked about transitions yet. That's the very next thing I'm going to say. So for now, we just have over a single patch UI a trivialization in this sense. But as you correctly observe, we can now do the following trick. Say I've chosen such a isomorphism TI over UI, and I will do the same thing over UJ. Then on this double intersection here, which I call UIJ, I can do something a little more interesting, maybe, or something that will be interesting. I mean, it's sort of clear what I do. If I just extend this picture, let me just copy it first. So we had the trivialization of I. Which looked like this. And this was called triv. I of gamma. Then, since we now assume to be working on, to be living over this double intersection Uij, I can just as well use the inverse of Tj to re-identify the group, this group, I mean the single group here, with the fiber Px, but now according to that other rule, which I've chosen on the patch Uj. And I take the inverse. I might indicate it by a bar. So this is the inverse morphism, natural isomorphism, inverse to this one over Uj. See, it's the inverse. Sorry, so it's, I draw a minus one, okay? No, it goes from, it trivializes Px, identifies it with X, with G, sorry. And now it's going the other way. It is. I'm already drawing it the other way around. So here we have Tj of Y. And here we have triv j of gamma. See, we have that naturality squared for the transport functor restricted to uj, we have this naturality square for the transport functor restricted to ui. Now on uij, I may compose them in such a way, and you see what I get is of course the composed natural isomorphism, which I will just call gij, and it takes values on points in x and sends them to group elements, right? Gij. Right, it sends it to G towards the isomorphisms, which are canonically identified with elements of the group G. So, right, that's the very next thing. Right, suppose we start with an arbitrary such functor. Suppose we can find a cover of base space such that we can find trivializations like this and build up transitions like this. If then all this can be chosen in a smooth way, then I say this arbitrary functor here has a smooth structure.
Okay.
Yeah, I just said it in my last sentence, in the next sentence. So. That's right, yeah. Right. Yeah, it is.
No, but it should not involve UI in section UJ. It should involve the conditions of each UI.
But you want the gluing to be smooth.
No,
you know,
no, but if each one is smooth, it would be globally smooth.
No, it's like saying what a manifold is, right? You identify it smoothly locally with R to the N, but then you have to demand that that going back and forth is also a smooth map.
No, but it's like saying that the function is smooth depending on if it's smooth on each open subset of a cover.
But this isn't a function, it's a function.
No, I understand, but it's a local thing. It's a local thing. Smoothness is a local property of this group. It's not, you don't need to go to the global thing. It's a purely local thing.
This functor as the original one that Lucas is not.
It doesn't have any property at all so far.
Well, I don't know.
I want this covering map to be nice. So in the end, I want the covering map to be a surjective submersion if I'm working in the category of smooth manifolds or smooth spaces. In general, it's supposed to be a regular epimorphism, right? That would be the general notion.
So if I take a base space, which is an interval, which is one set of covers, there's no conditions at all of them.
Right, all bundles over the interval are trivial.
But the thing is, you think every function corresponds to a smoothness.
The smoothness is not a property of a functor, right? So we have a whole bunch of functors, Ti. Doesn't make sense. Sorry, I have a whole bunch of functors, tra, ui.
It is additional structure. It is a smooth structure on that functor.
Then we have all these natural transformations. It doesn't yet make sense to say that they're smooth either, because gtor isn't a smooth, doesn't have a smooth set of objects. The first point at which he's able to say anything, demand that anything is smooth, is to demand that the natural transformation is GRJX.
But I'm still thinking, like, I can choose that additional structure in very strange ways.
It would correspond to different bundles. That would correspond to
different bundles.
This is the theorem, anyway.
The bundle is speaking of that.
What I'm doing is, as John says, I've told you what a functor is, now I've defined what a transition for that functor is, and now I'm saying I call that functor smooth if I can choose a cover of the set of objects of its domain, such that, and I can choose over each such open patch an identification with that trivialized functor here, such that these transitions, which are now honest functions from a smooth space to a smooth space, namely from X to G, such that these are smooth, and such that this assignment here is smooth. Then I say I've defined a smooth structure on my original functor, which just took values in the general category of G torsors. And, yes? Yeah. So as you can maybe already see, the data that is appearing here, even though I'm talking about natural isomorphism of functors, contains in particular the usual transition function data that you're used to from the theory of bundles. These Gij are nothing, I mean, they are precisely the transition functions of the local trivialization of just my bundle, P over UI, if it existed in the first place, obtained from precisely these local identifications for the trivial bundle. So, yeah, and that's actually, so let me just maybe write down the next fact, so I'm sort of summarizing the answer to the questions you all seem to have. So it's now a fact that we have an equivalence between functors, transport functors, I call them, from the path groupoid to G torsors, which have smooth local trivializations. In the sense just explained, so the category of these things is precisely equivalent to smooth principle G bundles with connection on X. With connection on X. Okay? Yes, which I think of as the large category of all G spaces that are isomorphic to G as a G space. Right? So, from...
If you drop the connection, you need a connection here, right?
I could, okay, I could say the corollary if I, instead of considering functors on paths in X, I consider functors on the discrete category over X, which only contains identity morphism for each point in X, then the statement would read, functors from the discrete category over X to G torsors with smooth local trivializations are equivalent to smooth principle bundles without connection.
And more obvious,
but see, it's yeah, okay. That's what it says.
Yeah.
See, just take this discussion here and sort of forget the rectangles and just remember the vertical morphisms. That's what you get when you do all this over the discrete category of a base space, right? All these paths are identity paths. And it just says you identify each fiber with G, and re-identifying in the sense of J and then identifying in the sense of I will give you a measure how these two identifications differ, and that's your transition function. And a smooth choice of transition functions, I mean, these will, of course, satisfy that usual co-cycle condition, which will play a role later, certainly define us, characterize principal bundle for us, right? So the hard, I mean, the only non-obvious thing to prove here is that a smooth functor from paths to a group is given that these functors are in bijection with Lie G valued one forms. So that's what you have to check. And then the rest you see is just ordinary bundle theory. It's just a statement about transition functions. And you'll just have to convince yourself that this naturality condition here on these trivial functors encodes the usual transition, the usual co-cycle condition on that one form. So let me maybe write it out. Yeah, I guess it has been proved also before by different methods by somebody whose name I apparently just forgot. Well, anyway, what you do is you use the fact that this guy is smooth here. Sorry, this thing is smooth, which means it's you know what it is if you know what the derivatives are on morphisms. Then you use the fact that it's a functor, which tells you that it's sufficient to know its derivatives on identity morphisms. And that's precisely what that one form does for you. So you see, generally, that functor transport, the trivial functor along a path will just be what is sometimes denoted as the path-ordered exponential of the integral of a one form with values in Li G, the Li algebra of G, on UI. We can integrate this one form in a path-ordered way, as it's called, along the path gamma. And this is how this smooth trivial functor will act. Then you have to convince yourself that, I mean, first of all, you have to convince yourself that these Gij satisfy the cocycle condition, which says that Gij times Gjk equals Gik on triple intersections, and that this naturality square then says that Ai, this one form A over the patch I, is Gij, no, space is running out here, Aj, Gij inverse plus, sorry, that's getting small, the Gij d Gij inverse. This is the usual cocycle relation for locally trivialized principal bundles with connection. And what I'm trying to say here is that that's precisely the data that defines or that characterizes a functor, so that is in G torsors, which has smooth local trivialization. Yeah. Right. Right. So you have right. So you can of course do very similar constructions for all kinds of notions of local well-behavedness, and that's precisely what I'm going to talk about next. If I may just continue, we can maybe answer all these questions. They will be maybe answered by themselves. So this is sort of the situation for ordinary bundles. So what I have to say here is the following. So I have a plan. There are two points here. First of all, I'd like to reformulate this. I've already tried a little, but I reformulate it in a general way that will allow me to think of all this sort of purely arrow theoretically, so then I can then internalize it in any other context, like a topos, or like in, two categories, or whatever I like. So my first goal is to formulate this situation. In a nice way, where nice means nice in the sense of category theory. So this will just be sort of reformulating everything, but reformulating it in such a way that the next step becomes almost self-evident, namely categorified. Right? So find the arrow theory of bundles with connections, internalize it into two categories, and see what you get. Okay. So that's the plan of parallel transport in lower dimensions. What we've just learned about parallel transport in dimension one, and the far goal of this Russian seminar here is to get a first impression of what parallel transport in dimension two would be. Okay. So I need to raise some boards, maybe. I have one here. I need more space. So let me just re-express this business with restricting to open sets, doing something there, gluing, in a way that doesn't use that many words, but uses more arrows. So here's the nice formulation. We had our original transport functor. It went from some domain category, which I still call P1X. So I still call it P1X, but in the end, we we may want to replace it by something. Right? I'm just trying to extract the gist of the situation we're talking about. So we started with a functor, with any functor, say, and we called it the main P1X, we called its codomain gtor. So what did we do? We chose a regular epimorphism of the space of objects of this category here, which in the case I discussed was a cover by open sets, but it may be something more sophisticated than that. So what we then actually did, we pulled that functor, the transport functor, back to the cover. That's exactly what this restriction business here amounts to. See, I assume that there's another category, which I call P1U, which in our example was the category of paths that lived entirely inside a single patch of my chosen cover. And there's an obvious epimorphism in cut from P1U to P1X, which I will also call P if you allow, which simply takes a path here, sends it to the same path here. I mean, these paths, they live in the cover, so we just send that path with P down to X. Okay? It's an epimorphism in cut, since every path in here can be chopped up by the fact that this is well behaved into pieces that all stay within one patch. So the image of P generates P1X, which is precisely the condition to be an epimorphism in cut, right? So this composite here is the pullback of our transport functor to the cover. Our condition was that pulled back to the cover, meaning restricted to local patches, it should behave nicely. Now we need to say, what does it mean to behave nicely? And I claim the nice way to say what I said before is to say the following. We specify a monomorphism from the category which I call sigma G, which is just the group G regarded as a category. Supposed to mean this was a monoid before, and I suspended to a monoidal category. Sorry, to a one-object category. This has a canonical injection into G torus. It simply sends the unique object in sigma G to G, regarded as the G torus over itself, and sends any element here to the G torus morphism obtained by, say, right multiplying G with that element. Okay? So, namely, what did I say? I said I wanted our transport, when pulled back to the cover, to look like something that just takes values in sigma G, in this sense. So, there was this functor called trif, defined on the cover, which sort of was given by all these components, which are called trif I, trif J, right? We just took values in torsomorphisms of this form, and they required this pullback and this trivial thing to be isomorphic and called the isomorphism T. It's this T. Sigma G is the category. Well, shouldn't write it this way. It's the category which contains a single object. It contains one morphism per element of G, and composition of morphisms is the product in G. You might just call it G, but yeah, it's just G regarded as a category, okay? Say that again, please. It's not smoothly equivalent, yeah, but it is, yeah. As a category in sets, it's equivalent, yeah. Yeah, but that's sort of the point. We want to have the freedom of, you know, having anything here and saying this thing is nice behaved if it factors in this local way through something here. So you see, this is, I should maybe give these things some names here. This category here sort of says, tells us how the typical fiber looks like. Defines the nature of the typical fiber. Right, and then it says, somehow encodes what the automorphisms of the typical fiber are supposed to be. This somehow tells us how we want to think of the fibers of our globally defined thing. that's, if you like, global fibers. Or the, well, yeah. Yeah. So these were a Parson base space and Parson some cover. So let me call this injection maybe here I. Then I claim the situation I've talked about is completely encoded in this diagram. And then I say, okay, I say the functor transport is P locally I trivializable if I can put it into such a diagram, into such a T, such that the transition obtained from T is smooth, and such that TRIF is smooth. Right, then it's a smoothly, P locally I trivializable. Yes. Yes.
So you would like to say the tri is smooth, but that doesn't mean anything, but by putting all this extra structure here, this square and all that stuff, you would assign a smooth structure to tra that uses the smooth structure on the
Exactly.
So where are double intersections in this situation?
Right. So they come in when you... So this is... See, the double intersections... I had to draw them, but they followed as soon as I had chosen the trivialization morphisms. They followed from this composition business. So we can do the same thing here, which is exactly the point now. From giving just this T, you know, this filled square there, we can construct a morphism that relates these things on double intersections. So let me write P1 U2 for the pullback of this P thing along itself. So this is a category of paths in double intersections of the chosen cover with the obvious maps P1 and P2 to P1 U. Then and we had right, so I can just form this simplicial thing here. Yeah, and of course we can go on like this. We have paths and triple intersections and so on with the obvious restriction maps between them. So I can hit this entire diagram with, I can precompose it with P1 and precompose it with P2 and compose the resulting things. So I can, instead of writing all these diagrams, I will sort of fold up one dimension and write it as P1 star. So P1 star of TRIF just means take TRIF and precompose it with P1, right? It's the pullback along P1 of TRIF. So we had the identification of that with our transport functor, which we call T inverse. And we can then, this was pullback of that P1, of that the trivialization along P1. We can do the same thing here for P2 and arrive at P2 star TRIF. Right, we can form this morphism here, which is a composite of sort of two versions of this T, once pulled back along P1 and once pulled back along P2. Yeah, exactly. So this diagram is the naturality square, sort of component-wise, of this natural transformation here.
If I understand, you're trying to
get the descent
from this.
Yeah, exactly. That's the next thing I'm going to derive. So I just define the morphism G here by this composite, and it's now a fact that this morphism G defines for us the descent data of a functor on that cover. So maybe I write the plan here. So you can now, using these diagrams, you can pull them back once more to paths in triple intersections and construct a transition triangle, which has the trivial functor restricted to the first component of the open set here has to pull back to the second one here, the third one here. We have the transition between those two here, the transition between those two here, the transition between those two here. And we can fill this diagram putting transport back to the full thing and inserting all our trivialization morphisms here as appropriate. That would be P1 star, T inverse. And we have something going this way, something this way, P3 star T. Right, I just compose three of these small triangles to a big one. Exactly, so that would be a fact here. Triangles of this sort right, are equivalent to what you would call a differential cocycle values in G on X. So it's equivalent to smooth principle G bundles of connection, right? I've just reformulated. It's the same things as these two over there. So this is all the same. Okay, so, yeah. If I choose P and I the way I've chosen it before, right, I can, of course, now have the freedom of choosing different things there. Right, so I'm about to say how this gives a Nana functor, and then Toby wanted to say something about some Nana functors. So I could say something which should take 5 minutes, and then we could have a break, or we do this after the break, yeah?
Whatever.
I think 5 minutes would be good? Okay. So so this is precisely an example of a descent datum, piece of descent data. Given such a triangle, we can try to sort of incorporate all the information encoded in it in a single functor in the following way. I want to compress this further. I want to find yet another nice reformulation of this. So if this triangle tells me I have all these local functors here, TRIF. This triangle tells me how they glue. I want to build the functor obtained by actually gluing them in a certain way, which is of course essentially this tra. I just have to say it, I guess, and then you'll see what I actually mean, right? I can't really announce this without saying it. Yeah, sorry for that, but see, these paths in the cover, even though P was an epimorphism, P is certainly not surjective on morphisms. It would maybe be nice if we'd had something covering our path category, which is actually surjective on morphisms. But we can build this now. Let's build the category of paths in the transition group. I call it P1, U bullet. You're supposed to think of it as paths in the transition group. What does it mean? It means that this is the category which is generated from paths in U together with the transition groupoid obtained from U, which is just the groupoid which has as objects all the points in U and has as morphisms ordered pairs of points. And we divide out. I'm about to. Right. So a morphism in here starts at some point X of base space, regarded as sitting in the patch UI. It goes to some other point in base space, but regarded as sitting in the patch UI. It has to be the same I here, because the smooth path can't jump between those patches.
The path in the cover, which is the disjoint union of the UI.
Exactly. It's a path in Yeah, this is a path in U, which has to sit in one of the UIs. So in this case, it's a path in UI. Okay, so U, it's a, right, so U, I'm assuming that U now is just the disjoint union over I of all these UIs, okay? And then a path in U has to sit in one of these UIs.
It,
of the P.
One of U is the coproduct of the P1 UI. The path groupoid of U is the coproduct of the.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, okay. Thanks, yeah. So we have a path here in X, which we regard as sitting in the patch UI. And we might have the same path, but regard it as sitting in UJ. Assume it sits in the double intersection of UI with UJ. Then we'd say, okay, there's another morphism in here, which we call gamma J. The same path down in X, but now regard it as sitting in UJ. See, now we have this transition groupoid here, which just contains of pairs of points in the cover with the same projection down to base space. And there's a unique morphism between any of these. So there's a morphism here, which I don't even give a name because it's uniquely specified by its source and target. It's the jump from XI to XJ, if you like. Similarly here. And so I built this category by generating it from these morphisms, and I divide our relations to say that all these squares you commute. Okay. And that I call the groupoid of paths in the transition groupoid.
Can you address again, what are the objects of the groupoid of paths in the
transition? See, it's generated from these two categories. They have the same set of objects, the same space of objects.
Yeah, but then you generate the space of morphisms. Like,
yeah, I freely generate from this and divide out this relation. Yeah. And there's a universal property of this thing, but I don't think I will write it down. I will just emphasize to you now.
Punchline.
Yeah, the punchline. I will emphasize the punchline now so that you all can have a break from all these punchlines here. That if you think about what this means, this has a unique morphism here. Say we had another point x, k here. See, there would automatically be commuting triangles here in this category because there are unique morphisms. It's a co-discrete category, right? So if you think about what this means and disentangle the naturality squares of this triangle of natural isomorphisms, which are just those, you'll find that the data you obtain from such a triangle is precisely sufficient and necessary to define a functor from paths in the transition groupoid to sigma G. So that's the punchline.
My joke was that if P1 of U full X could be described in this way, it's the same thing as the category of paths in our whole space X.
Well, it's equivalent.
It's equivalent.
It's a surjective equivalent.
In other words, you would like to describe paths in the whole space X.
Right. Right, so it's essentially the same punchline, but you're better. Sorry? But we have these jumps now in between. So here's the punchline in symbols. We started with something which went from P1X to G torsus. Remember, we can choose different names here if you like, but I'm using this to indicate what was going on. And we did a whole lot of things today. We said what it would mean to be it locally trivial. In order to do this, we chose this epimorphism P, which then allowed us after some work to construct that category of paths in the transition groupoid, which I call P1U bullet. Now, we have an obvious projection here, which is what John just mentioned, which I might also call, P twiddle, right? It's obvious in the sense that we just forget all these indices in that index set I. And yeah, right. So it's P1 U. It's minus yeah, yeah. So it's not yeah. Right. It's yeah. Yes. But, yeah. Right. Right.
Is it actually projected? So where is the composition of flux hidden from this instrument?
Oh, okay. See, it's generated. So say if you have any path down here in X, right, that's a morphism in P1X. Yeah, so I cover this by open sets. Then I lift, say, by UI and UJ. Then I would lift this here to X, I. And then this point here maybe would be called Z. And Z, I. And have that path gamma 1 regarded as sitting in UI. Then I choose to continue from Z, J. The same point Z, but now regarded as sitting in UJ with gamma 2. The second half of my path to arrive at y, j. So here's the discontinuity, which would have been there if I just considered paths in just in the cover, right? There would be no connection here. But now I have these unique morphisms connecting precisely points that sit actually over the same base point and were just lifted to different patches. So this way I can lift every path down in base space to path upstairs. Yeah, but you can make this smooth here. You divide out all these things. So another way to say this is that every path in here has a unique lift to P1, your bullet, with specified source and target. You decide to which patch you lift the source point and in which patch you want to lift the target point, and then there's a unique lift of that path to P1, your bullet. You know, you choose one of these representatives, that you have to divide out all these relations so you can, you know, change the point of Z here if you like, or insert more jumps and all these things. It will all be the same. That's precisely what this condition ensures. It really says it doesn't matter if you regard the path as sitting in I or in J, as long as you can jump in between.
So you're asserting that the king still has an equivalent, so I could believe you. So what was the punchline? I know people are explaining
that. Yeah. The punchline? That we can re-encode the entire data that I was talking about into such a span. We can go from P1, your bullet, that's the punchline. We have to take that local data which we have, which was that functor TRIF, defined on parts in U. We can apply that to the generators in here. Then we can apply our transition G to the parts in here. See, that transition natural isomorphism precisely gives us means to label all these morphisms here, these unique jump morphisms, by group elements. And so we can apply them to the generators. And the fact that this is really then a functor on P1, your bullet, amounts to saying that applying it this way respects these relations here. And these are precisely my transition relations. So I get this functor here, and it encodes all the data that was encoded in that triangle. Then I can just inject this into gTOR. And here's the punchline. So we've built a smooth functor from this subjective equivalence to that space of that category of local, sorry, of our typical fiber. And it encodes all the transition data, all the co-cycle data that we had obtained by locally trivializing the globally defined transport functor. And one more arrow. You want me to draw this arrow here? Yeah, there's an arrow like this. That's true. So,
well, that's sort of an arrow you've been carefully avoiding.
Right, because this one isn't smooth. Yeah, I can draw it.
Draw it rough.
Well, it's certainly there, right?
Right.
We started. Well, we.
Part that you invert this tilde.
Yeah.
Which is sort of.
Well, yeah, you can, yeah.
Which is what we're going
to talk. Yeah, right. There are several things I can do to this. Yeah, but. Okay, let me stop it maybe at this point. This is a span now, you see, in categories, and this is called an ANA functor, and Toby asked me to maybe say a few words about smooth ANA functors. And my punchline is doing this nice formulation of connections on principal bundles that I proposed here. In particular, gives us the data of an ANA functor of this sort. And I guess we'll have a break now.